This episode of the Start Time Podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/paranormal. Over 180,000 titles to choose from your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Story time. Welcome to the Story Time Podcast with Bran and Dave, except Dave isn't here. Who is here in Dave's place is a much greater human than Dave will ever be. My awesome and frequently mentioned wife, Caitlin. Caitlin, welcome to the Story Time.
Hi.
How do you feel? This is your first podcasting experience. Or on a scale of 1 to 10, where are you at?
I'm at a 15.
Right on. That's exactly the type of answer Dave would give. So you're gonna fit right on in. What's your least favorite thing about Dave? If you like, as you listen to
that
the show,
that he doesn't live in Greenville.
Yeah, but also like maybe his voice, how condescending he is.
No, I don't think that's very nice.
Well, it might not be nice, but truth hurts. He picked a Yankees game over doing this.
Oh, well, the Yankees are pretty good.
No, you stop it right now. No, we're Red Sox fans.
Right. Just kidding. Yankees suck.
Yeah, Yankees suck. Do you know why? Like, do you know that the Red Sox and the Yankees are rivals?
Yeah.
Who's your favorite baseball team besides the Red Sox?
The Atlanta Braves.
Good answer. That was really, really nice. Really smart. You're a big listener of the Story Time Podcast.
Big listens.
What's your favorite interview on the Story Time ever? Let's talk about how great our show is.
No, it is really the best show, and it's the only show I listen to. So
that's true.
That's how great it is. Yeah. I just reserve all of my time to listen to you guys.
So as you think back to all the interviews, which one really sticks out to you?
Honestly, I feel like the first interview will always be my favorite.
With Preston Dennett?
Yeah, he was the best.
Out-of-body experiences?
Yes,
you were really
so
nervous about out-of-body experiences, though.
Well, especially when Dave said he was going to go try it. Yeah. And I was like, Dave, don't come and visit us.
And I told Dave, hey, just let you know, Caitlin's a little worried about you doing this, so... Maybe don't.
Yeah, I don't think it worked out for him, though.
But Preston said best thing ever. Like, that's the best thing you could ever do is an out-of-body experience.
Oh, yeah. Like, better than eating ice cream?
That's what he says, but, you know, it's like, whatever. Doubt it. Ice cream's awesome. But let's do a quick lightning round to see where you're at as far as, you know, like, knowledge and opinions and all that good stuff. Lightning round.
That sounded like thunder.
Boom. Lightning. do aliens exist?
I don't know.
Okay. What about Bigfoot?
Maybe.
Okay. what about ghosts?
Yes.
Oh, wow. What about leprechauns?
Doubt it.
Favorite cereal?
Ooh.
There's nothing better for an audio experience than silence.
I'll go with the Lucky Charms.
Yeah. Best vacation memory?
Vacation memory...
Well, visiting Dave in New York?
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty great. Probably going to New York on our honeymoon was the best vacation.
Dave wasn't there, so it made it a lot better. favorite superhero?
Oh, the The Batman.
Yep. Favorite movie about aliens?
Ooh, Independence Day.
Yeah. Are you excited?
Yeah, so yeah. Excited.
And then finally, if you had to rate The Starry Time on iTunes, what type of review would you leave?
I would say 5 stars, listen to it, or you're stupid.
That's true. Yeah, and speaking of which, I don't know if you knew this, but you actually can leave reviews and ratings on iTunes, just like Caitlin just did, and like not in real life, but you actually can. You simply find us on the iTunes and then go.
Do that right now.
You're gonna do it right now? Are you lying?
Yeah.
You're on Facebook. You're
lying.
You can go to the iTunes, find Starry Time, and then leave us a review. We prefer the big stars, but we got one that's really negative, like that hates us, and then we got a couple that are like, it's fine. So tell us what you think, or just email us if it's really mean. You can email us at starrytime@gmail.com, just like our listener did, who emailed us this guest idea. Today on the show we have Dr. Hugh Ross, and I got an email over the weekend from a listener named Bobby who said, hey, get Dr. Hugh Ross on the show. And so, alas, we work quickly here, and we got Dr. Hugh Ross, and we're excited about it. And we're going to get to Dr. Hugh Ross right after this quick word from the things that hopefully make us money.
There it is.
Hey, Caitlin.
Yeah.
Have you ever wanted to listen to books?
Yeah.
What do you do about it?
Well, I usually just cry.
Why?
Because I don't know how to do it.
Oh, well then whip out the Kleenex and stop crying, because here's the way to do it. There's an amazing program that you can get on your computer or any one of your electronic devices. It's called Audible. Audible has over 180,000 books that you can listen to. So you don't have to read. You don't have to like even know how to read, for that matter, although it helps with typing in the titles. But nevertheless, you can go to audibletrial.com/paranormal, and by doing that, you'll get your hands on a free 30-day trial, which gets you a free audiobook.
What?
Yeah. Now, we did this, you and I.
Oh, did we?
We did.
Oh.
Now, tell the listeners how it went for us.
Yeah, no, it was the best. I mean, we actually kept it, and we downloaded a bunch of books.
It's true.
We have like 10 books?
Well, 5, 6.
Well, you have, yeah.
So
a lot. And I used to listen to it on the way to work.
And now you're going to get back into it.
That's right.
Right. And listen, the great thing about Audible is like what we did is we had so many that we couldn't keep up with, and so because we're slower listeners than we are readers, apparently. And so we just put the account on hold. And we'll pick it back up when we get through these books. And like with each month, you get a book. So it's kind of cool. Yeah. So, but listen, if you just want to give it a try, get the free book. You can go to audibletrial.com/paranormal to get your free audiobook on this day of May. Welcome back to the Starry Time podcast with Bran and not Dave. This is Caitlin. Really excited about this interview tonight, who was suggested to us by a listener, Bob. Thanks for this. Dr. Hugh Ross is going to be with us tonight. We're really excited about it. He's the founder and the president of Reasons to Believe. He's an astronomer. He's a best-selling author, and he travels the globe speaking on the compatibilities of advancing scientific discoveries with timeless truths of Christianity. His organization, Reasons to Believe, is dedicated to demonstrating via a variety of resources and events that science and biblical faith are allies, not enemies. Dr. Ross, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you for the invitation.
Absolutely, and we're excited to talk about aliens and stuff tonight, which I know you wrote about quite some time ago, but thank you for joining us to talk about this topic that is kind of interesting and unique. And one thing that's kind of cool is me and Dave, who's usually here, and my wife, we're all skeptics, but we're also all Christians just like you. And so it's cool to talk about the paranormal and stuff like that, but also share the same faith. So kind of talk, tell us about how you kind of got interested in the topic of UFOs and what brought you to desire to study it and write a book about it quite some years ago.
Well, I became fascinated with astronomy starting at age 7. I knew that would be my future career from the age of 8 onwards. I grew up in Vancouver, British Columbia, mm-hmm. and joined the Royal Astronomical Society chapter there at age 15. At age 16, they made me the director of observations there, and I thought it'd be a really cool idea to have an exhibition, a booth at the Pacific National Exhibition. It draws, you know, a million people, and so we had a booth there, but they put our booth right next to the Flying Saucer Club, and so that was the beginning of my venture into UFOlogy and aliens. And everywhere I've been since age 16 in terms of different universities, they made me the one that handled all the UFO reports. So whatever telescope or observatory I worked at, I was the guy that handled all the UFO sightings that people were calling in about.
Cool, cool.
So Dr. Ross, is it possible to be a Christian and believe in aliens?
Well, it depends what you mean by aliens. I mean, I've got a collection of, about 8 books written by well-respected physicists and astronomers and the UFO phenomena. And one thing they all share in common is that they believe the UFO phenomena is real, but that it's not physical. Mm. And that we're dealing with beings that do not live within our physical universe. Jacques Vallée, for example, says that they are interdimensional beings. They live between our dimensions. Others say they live beyond our dimensions. Well, as a Christian, I recognize that the Bible has created God has created 2 different kinds of intelligent life, life that's constrained by the laws of physics and the dimensions of our universe, mm-hmm. and another group of beings that are called angels that are not subject to our laws of physics. And so these angels are beings that can come into our realm and exit our realm. They're not constrained by our realm. And so the question is what do people report as UFOs? Would it have anything to do with these intelligent beings that the Bible talks about that are not constrained by the physics of the universe?
Yeah, yeah. So one thing that I think is interesting and that Dave and I try to point out as we talk about paranormal news, especially relating to aliens, is lots of times people are quick to suggest that UFOs automatically equal aliens, which isn't necessarily true. It's just simply a flying object that we don't fully understand. So is that kind of how you would explain some of these sightings that people see that immediately they think that it's an alien from outer space, when in reality it might just be something that we don't exactly know what it is, but it's actually of this world and of this country even?
Yeah, that's correct. It's really rare that I get a UFO report that doesn't prove to be some understood natural phenomena, some military exercise, or a hoax. In fact, of all the thousands of reports that I personally have handled, only about 1% cannot be easily explained as some natural phenomena. I mean, what I find interesting is that the planet Venus and the star cluster Pleiades accounts for about half the sightings that get reported to me. Another big chunk are what I would call optical illusions, where people claim that they see this hovering set of lights on the horizon. And I say, well, were you inside a building when you saw that? And they say, well, yes, I was. And it turns out they're simply seeing a reflection of a chandelier off the window between them and the horizon. Yeah. So you get to figure out, okay, what kinds of things would pop up as people thinking that they were seeing some unusual phenomenon in the sky. That takes care of about 99%. But there is a 1% residual that can't be explained as natural phenomena or some human event like a military exercise or, say, a bunch of engineering students pulling off a prank.
Yeah.
So in your opinion, do you think this 1%, are they real encounters?
That 1%, I think, are real. I mean, you know, when people report a UFO sighting to me, I ask them a lot of questions. And I think the strongest evidence that we're dealing with something real are the 2,000-plus UFO crash sites, mm-hmm. where people see a UFO traveling through the sky and it crashes into the earth. And you go to the crash site and you'll notice that the ground is actually depressed, sometimes by as much as a foot. So obviously something that was exerting great pressure on the ground happened. You'll see that the snow has been melted, if snow is there. The vegetation is damaged. So clearly something real took place, but it's non-physical reality, because when you go to the crash site, there's no debris. I mean, if an airplane crashes into the earth, there's debris. In the case of these UFOs, no debris. Mm. Moreover, when you talk to people who have witnessed, say, a UFO going through the sky and crashing into the earth, I ask them questions about, you know, how fast it's going across the sky. If there's multiple sightings, we can actually calculate the velocity. And often the velocity is in the thousands, even tens of thousands of miles per hour. But what's interesting is that the people who see the phenomena do not see any evidence of heat friction as this thing goes through the atmosphere. Hmm. And there's no sonic boom. So the lack of a sonic boom, the lack of any kind of heat friction as it goes through the atmosphere, again, would be evidence. We are indeed looking at something real, but it's real and non-physical, which explains why you get so many famous scientists just dismissing the UFO phenomenon entirely. I mean, while I was at the University of Toronto, I had Carl Sagan briefly as a professor one summer.
Yeah.
And he categorically denied the UFO phenomena. But here's the difference. In his worldview, it's impossible for something to be real and not physical. Mm. For him, all of reality had to be physical. And so he just dismissed it, saying, well, look, there's clear evidence that it's not physical, therefore it can't be real. But from a Christian worldview perspective, we believe that God created beings that are real but not physical,
sure.
namely the angels.
Yeah.
You know, he himself can dwell in non-physical reality. So it's all a matter of your worldview, whether you can accept the evidence.
Right. Now, another thing we talked about, you know, the crashes, but there's also a lot of people that we've talked to in the past who have interviewed hundreds of people who claim to have been abducted, experiencers, if you will. How do you make sense of those with your Christian perspective, and even our Christian perspective? We're trying to wrap our minds around the reality that people do claim this to happen. And what's crazy is their stories are actually pretty similar across the board. And so how have you kind of managed that thinking in your mind, thinking about Christianity, but also these amazing experiences with people being abducted?
Well, if you go back a few decades, there was a famous physicist by the name of Alan Hynek, an astronomer and a physicist, and he devoted a good 40 years to researching the UFO phenomena. And his view was he would discount all sightings unless they were close encounters. Mm-hmm. And he came up with a different definitions. Close encounters of the first kind, close encounters of the second kind, and close encounters of the third kind. And so he would define a close encounter of the first kind as where a human being was 500 feet or less away from the UFO phenomena. And a close encounter of the second kind is where they had some physical contact with the UFO. And a contact of the third kind is where they actually got injured by the phenomena, or they got abducted. So that's kind of, and, you know, and there are lots of people in all three categories. And so, but the thing you notice is that there's so many of these close encounters that, you know, physicists who studied this, just like Alan Hynek said, this has got to be real. There can't be millions of individuals with detailed descriptions of these very close encounters and not have it be real. And the fact is the injuries are real that they experience. The terrifying nightmares that repeat every night are definitely real phenomena. So something is going on. And a number of physicists have pushed it a little bit further and said there's a common denominator in all these close encounters. Every one of them is harmful. Mm. It's never beneficial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, one thing that I thought was interesting, in our very first interview, we interviewed an author named Preston Dennett, and we talked with him about aliens, but also about out-of-body experiences, which he just raved about. He said it was the best thing that's ever happened to him, and he kind of talked about some of the things that he saw in his out-of-body experiences. And one of the discussions that Caitlin and I had at home, but also Dave and I on the show, was like, could it be that the thing that he thinks is the most amazing and the thing that he's actually, like he would say, this is his greatest joy, is it possible that's actually a demonic presence that's trying to convince him of what he now believes is truth is actually truth, when in reality we know that it's not true? Like, truth is the gospel, truth is Jesus. So is it possible that these abductions or whatever you want to call them, and even out-of-body experiences, are actually demonic presences that are trying to pull people away from the light and draw them into the darkness?
Well, you're raising a good point, because we're told in the Bible that the fallen angels, the demons, their strategy is to give you power in return for the loss of truth. And we see this consistently, that when you look at the messages we get from these so-called UFO beings, what they're telling you is not accurate. And this is one thing I notice as an astronomer, is that very consistently in these close UFO encounters, these UFO beings will communicate astronomical information, secret astronomical information, to the human contact. But as a professional astronomer, I can tell you what they're being communicated, we know, is incorrect. And if you look at the history of the UFO phenomena, you go back 150 years, these UFO beings were telling people they were from the backside of the moon. Well, now the general public recognizes that that's not credible. And so the story changed, where they said that they were from Mars or from Venus. But, you know, now they're saying they're from another planetary system, because the general public is aware that you can't have advanced life on any planet or solar system except Earth. And what I describe in my book, Lights in the Sky and Little Green Men, the astronomical information they give you is a little bit beyond the street level knowledge of most people that are alive. Mm. But it's always provably incorrect by the astronomers of the day. And it keeps pace with the knowledge that people have about astronomy. The other thing you notice is the UFO phenomena keeps pace with our technology. 150 years ago, these UFOs in the sky were like slow-moving dirigibles, and they kind of looked like dirigibles. And then as you move into the 20th century, they became flying saucers, moving at several hundred miles per hour. When you get to the end of World War II, they're moving at the speed of sound. Mm-hmm. And now we got them moving at 25,000 miles per hour, always a little bit ahead of our latest technology. And this is what's caused the physicists who studied the UFO phenomena to say there's deception here. The fact that they're just a little bit ahead of the astronomical knowledge of the general public, a little bit ahead of our technology, and that the technology story advances, as well as the knowledge about astronomy, tells us, hey, this is deception. Especially mm-hmm. when you combine that with the harmful effects of the close encounters. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people think this is a great thing because of the power that's bestowed upon them. Yeah. But keep in mind, that's the strategy of the demons. They'll give you power if you're prepared to give up truth.
Do you think that perhaps the goal of why demons would do this would be to create a type of pseudo-god for people to grab hold of, and something that they fear because it's not something that they fully know, but something that seems great because of the experiences that they've had?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, again, I can go back to Carl Sagan, I remember when I took that course from him, he kept making the point that we human beings are facing intractable problems. We're messing up the planet, and we're going to, you know, self-extinct if we do not make contact with extraterrestrials that have already figured out how to solve our problems. So I remember him in the course talking about there's got to be some intelligent, advanced civilization on a distant planet that's already come up with an Encyclopedia Galactica that will solve all of our problems. And if we can listen in on the broadcast of that Encyclopedia Galactica, you know, the search for extraterrestrial intelligent life, we'll be able to solve all of our problems. And I remember that I was a graduate student at the University of Toronto hearing this. And this is a course that Carl taught to the astronomy department there. And I remember nudging my fellow students and saying, don't we already have an Encyclopedia Galactica? And isn't Carl's problem is he's not prepared to submit to its message? And, you know, God has given us an Encyclopedia Galactica. But people are looking elsewhere for a different Encyclopedia Galactica. And what's interesting in the UFO religions, there's four well-established UFO religions in the United States alone. But the foundation of those UFO religions is something called the Urantia Book. The Urantia Book is about 4,000 pages long, and it was dictated through automatic writing from UFO beings to human beings that wrote it down. And if you look at that Urantia Book, a third of its content is focused on denying the deity of Jesus Christ. So there you can see the agenda.
Yeah, for sure. Now, one thing that we've gotten a little bit of as we've been doing this show is some feedback from listeners who shared the same faith as we do and just kind of warn us to be careful about talking about this stuff and investigating this stuff for fear of allowing a demonic presence to enter into our life. And my thought on that has always been, well, like, I know the truth. Like, I'm a follower of Jesus. I hold very firmly the gospel. So my question is there anything that these experiencers have in common that I could look at my life and say, well, I don't have to fear these things because of what I hold to be true? Like, do I have to fear aliens? Do I have to fear demons as a follower of Jesus?
Well, in my book, Lights in the Sky and Little Green Men, you know, I'm a scientist, so I says what we're proposing to explain the UFO phenomena is testable. You know, my claim is when you look at that 1% residual that can't be explained naturally or through some human activity, is it seems to only happen to people that have significant open doors to occult activity. And so where do you see these UFO encounters at the highest prevalence? Well, when I went to the Soviet Union, when the Soviets were still in control, it was everywhere in Moscow, and then it was Leningrad, now St. Petersburg, and Kiev. That's where I spoke. And it's like everywhere I went, everybody said, you know, you're an astronomer. Can you please talk to us about UFOs? And I was amazed at how many people had these close encounters. Well, I think for good reason. Back then, the Soviet Union was trying to develop secret weapons to defeat the West. And so virtually every major university had a department of occult physics. And I got to meet some of these physicists. A lot of them were demon-possessed. Many of them had had these close encounters with UFOs. And kind of what I write about in Lights in the Sky and Little Green Men, if you will take the steps to close the doors to your occult activity, that will be the end of your UFO experiences. So that's how you can put my explanation to the test. I mean, one thing I wouldn't encourage you to do, if you open the doors, you're going to have these encounters. Yeah. If you close the doors, that'll be the end of your encounters. So I don't have to fear this as a Christian. Yeah. As long as my life as a Christian is clean with respect to the occult, I've got nothing to fear from these beings. But I also tell people who are involved in ministry with UFOs, deal with it when you face it, but don't make it your life mission to be, quote, rescuing people from these UFO encounters, because it can completely consume you and you would now be diverted from more useful and more productive forms of ministry.
Sure.
But hey, if you encounter it, definitely deal with it, but don't search it out.
Now, would it be a fair assumption to say that the same type of people who are inclined to believe in Jesus are also possibly the same type of people who are inclined to believe in aliens, because they're already kind of inclined to believe in the supernatural, if you will? And if yes, would it be helpful for Christians to, when they hear about somebody who believes in aliens, kind of talk to that person, because they might actually be willing to dive into the gospel and what that truth is?
I think so. I mean, a lot of part of what I write in the book is, are we really alone in the universe in being the only intelligent physical life form? And basically make the point, we need the entire universe to exist in order for a single planet to be possible in which advanced life exists. And I remember doing a debate with the atheist particle physicist Victor Stenger at the Caltech in front of the International Skeptic Society conference. And part of our debate was, you know, life elsewhere. One thing we agreed on is that given the physics that we see in the universe, we human beings must be alone in being the only physical life form. Everywhere else we look, we see hostility to advanced life. And moreover, we've actually had big searches for signals from intelligent civilizations and other planets.
Yeah.
One thing we know, thanks to the very vigorous search for extraterrestrial intelligent life, is that there is no intelligent life anywhere within 250 light years of planet Earth. And so if they're visiting us, then they would be traveling across 250 light years of interstellar space.
Which is really impressive.
Well, it's not only incredible, it's impossible, right, if they're physical beings. It's right. Simply not possible for physical beings to travel that distance and survive. You know, when you watch Star Trek and see them moving at the velocities they're moving at, that's not possible for physical life. In fact, about the highest speed you can travel through interstellar space is about 1% the velocity of light. You go faster than that, you kill the life that's on board the spaceship, which means you're looking at a minimum of 25,000 years to cut across interstellar space, and that exceeds the maximum window for advanced technology by more than a factor of 10. And so it's simply not possible that we're being visited by beings like ourselves, but it is certainly possible that we're being visited by beings that are not constrained by the laws of physics.
Yeah. Is there a difference between your view of aliens and the general belief of ghosts?
Yeah, I think there is a correspondence between belief in leprechauns and ghosts and UFO beings. I mean, that's one thing I write about in the book, is that there's been an evolution in this UFO phenomenon over the past 3,000 years. That's one reason we put the subtitle Little Green Men, because, yeah, you go back a few hundred years and people were claiming they were getting supernatural visitations from these leprechauns. And then, you know, in terms of the UFO phenomena, it started off as slow-moving dirigibles at cloud level. And now what they're claiming is that it's advanced spacecraft moving at more than 25,000 miles per hour. So, yeah, I would take that whole phenomenon of ghosts, spirits, apparitions, UFO beings, all of that, where it's real, is a manifestation of fallen angels or demons. And again, the proof of all that is you only see it where there's open doors to the occult. And where there isn't, you don't have that.
Yeah.
So, for example, I remember a Christian couple in our church who bought a home. And when they moved into the house, there were physical objects moving by themselves suspended in the air. And one of the rooms was 10 degrees colder than the rest of the rooms. And so they called me and said, the previous owners must have left something behind. And it took us a weekend to find it, but we found that there was an astrological forecasting device up in the rafters of the garage. And as soon as we destroyed that, that was the end of the, quote, the supernatural phenomena happening in that room. We also talked to the neighbors, and that turned out to be a room where teenage boys were holding seances, actually making contact with these fallen angels.
It's crazy. One thing I do want to get into is kind of your business reason to believe, or your ministry, I guess. And I really do appreciate it, because you're trying to do something that I think a lot of Christians are afraid to do, which is kind of marry the two relationships between science and Christianity. If you could sum it up, like, what are some, I don't know, things that people get wrong about the relationship between science and Christianity, and kind of the thing that you've noticed as you've begun to research this and talk to people that people just don't get right when it comes to science and Christianity?
Well, to generalize, they think that science and Christianity, or science and the Bible, are enemies. And we here at Reasons to Believe see them as powerful allies supporting one another. And to give you some examples of misconceptions of that, is, you know, people look at the first two chapters of Genesis and say, hey, we're only looking at thousands of years, and the scientific evidence tells us the Earth and the universe have been around for billions of years. They look at Genesis 1 and say, it seems like the sun is claimed to be created after the plants. How can you keep plants warm without the heat and light of the sun? And they say, if the Bible is that wrong, even on its first page, then clearly the Bible is not a scientifically credible book. But what they're failing to do is to recognize that Genesis 1 and Genesis 2 follow the scientific method for good reasons. That's where the scientific method came from. The scientific method has its origins in the Bible. The Bible not only commands us to put everything to the test, it shows us step by step how to put things to the test. And step one of what we call the scientific method is, do not interpret until you establish the point of view and the initial conditions. And you look at Genesis 1-2, it gives you exactly that, the point of view and the initial conditions for the 6 days of creation. It tells you the Spirit of God is hovering over the surface of the waters of planet Earth. So that's the point of view from which we should interpret the 6 days of creation. And it gives you the initial conditions. It's empty of life. It's unfit for life. It's dark on the surface of the waters, and the water covers the whole surface of the earth. Now, there are dozens of accounts on creation in the Bible. The longest of those accounts of creation is in Job 37, 38, and 39. And when Job 38 discusses the conditions relevant to creation day one, it tells us that God had wrapped the seas of the earth with clouds that kept the seas dark. So there it's explicit why it's dark on the surface of the waters. The clouds would not let the light of the sun, moon, and stars reach the surface of the earth. And creation day one, it's let there be light. Notice the text does not say that God created the light or made the light. That all happened in Genesis 1-1 when God created the universe. So there was light in the universe, but it was dark on the surface of the waters, because Earth at that time had a cloud layer that would not let light pass through. Creation day one, God transformed the atmosphere from opaque to translucent. Creation day four, he transformed it from translucent to transparent, where for the first time, creatures on the surface of the Earth could see where the sun, moon, and stars resided in the sky. And if you look from that point of view and those starting conditions, everything in Genesis 1 and Genesis 2 is scientifically accurate in the way it's recorded, and it's all in the correct chronological order. And how can you explain that unless Moses was supernaturally inspired by the one that actually did the deed?
Yeah. Now, going just a little bit further into that, as you've explained that, maybe the people who have doubted Christianity have been firm believers of science. They're strong on the science and big doubters. As you explain that to them, does that help them be able to connect the two? Does that have you seen your belief in this and your study of this and your explanation of it transform people's thoughts when it comes to science and Christianity?
Yeah, we see that on a consistent basis. I mean, I did not come to Christ in a Christian home. And so it was just my reading Genesis on my own where I was able to draw these conclusions. But I found that leading theologians and seminaries around the world have drawn the same conclusion. And you know, when I explain this to scientists and engineers, they say, wow, I heard something very different in church, but this really makes sense when I look at Genesis from that perspective. And yes, I've seen numerous scientists come to faith in Christ just simply through explaining to them, you know, how we're to understand the creation text in the Bible. And that includes a gentleman who was a Nobel laureate in chemistry, you know, a very outspoken atheist, but once he understood what the Bible was saying on these issues, it just changed his life dramatically. He publicly gave his life to Christ at the second largest church in the United States.
Hmm. Dr. Ross, amazing, really cool stuff. How can people first find the Little Green Men book, but also look up more stuff about Reasons to Believe if they want to dive into the science and Christianity aspect of what you're talking about?
Well, they can go to our website. It's really easy. It's reasons.org, and they'll see all of our books and DVDs listed. We also have a DVD called The R-UFO Hypothesis. It's a television documentary, so they can get that. But our books and DVDs are also available places like Amazon.com. But Reasons.org is a place you can go to get your questions answered. And I personally maintain a Twitter site and a Facebook page where people can ask me questions. And Reasons to Believe, the organization I founded, we do the same thing at Reasons.org.
Right on. Thank you so much for joining us on The Start Time and for talking about a really interesting subject from a really a way that a lot of people don't think about it through a biblical lens. So thank you for doing that and helping us as Christians think well about that. We really do appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome.
All right, you have a great night, okay?
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Dr. Hugh Ross, amazing, great guest.
Yeah,
so good. I encourage everyone to go out and take a gander at his Lights in the Sky and Little Green Men book. It's an older book, but it sounds, I haven't read it, I read the descriptions and I listened to him talk, so I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's actually a really cool book. And it's not just from Dr. Hugh Ross. He wrote it with a few other people with some differing opinions and stuff like that. So I would encourage you guys to go out and listen. But Caitlin, wife, thoughts on Dr. Hugh Ross?
I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah.
Especially his views on ghosts.
Yeah, for sure. Now, one thing I thought was interesting was that he's a skeptic, just like us. So it's nice to talk sometimes to fellow skeptics so that you don't feel like you're just being like talked to the whole time, but you're actually talking with someone, which we don't feel like we're being talked to when we do our interviews. Like, we really enjoy them, but it's fun sometimes to talk to another skeptic that's kind of where we are or maybe further along in their skepticism as we are, and also shares the same faith. So all those things are really cool, and we got that with Dr. Hugh Ross. So we're really thankful for Dr. Hugh Ross's willingness to come on the Starry Time and talk about mainly aliens, but also apparently ghosts. Hey, if you want to check out the Starry Time, what's the website, babe?
Starry Time Podcast. No.
Starry Time.
Starrytime.weebly.com.
And on that website, podcast, you can find all of our interviews as well as the daily news. So if you're like, gosh, I don't know if I want to fully subscribe, go there, listen to some of it, and be like, okay. And then once you want to subscribe and get it daily on your electronic device or however you want to do it, you can click to subscribe, and it'll open up iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. And that's the way to do it. That's how it's done.
That's how it's done.
So starrytime.weebly.com. And if you think that Caitlin is a better co-host than Dave, you can send us an email, starttimepodcast@gmail.com.
We all know it's true.
Well, I do, and you do, and I think most people do, but we'll find out. If more people email us about you than Dave, then we'll probably go ahead and make the switch.
Right.
Hey, thanks for listening, Caitlin. Thanks for filling in for Dumb Dave. And thanks to Dr. Hugh Ross for joining us. This was the Star Time. We'll be back tomorrow with the news. Until then, happy day.